Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back after a few weeks off to the Indie Football Podcast.
23, actually.
Yeah, not enough time, which I'm sure we will cover. That was the voice of Miguel Delaney, chief football writer of The Independent. Say hello, Miguel.
Hello.
Mine is the voice of Ed Mallion, sports editor of The Independent. And to my left is Jack Pitbrook, also freshly returned from Russia. He had a week off, and then he's back at the grind.
Hey, Ed, good to be back.
Did you enjoy your first game of the season yesterday?
I did, because Manchester City won. No, it was fun. I thought that City were much better than Chelsea, yeah. Obviously. I mean, it was obviously a game between a team who have been training with their manager they're now in their third year, against a team whose manager didn't even start pre-season. Because, yeah, of course, Chelsea didn't get around to giving Sarri the job until, I can't remember exactly what the date was, but it was like 2 weeks ago, wasn't
it? Yeah, he's had 2 weeks of the team.
Yeah, and of course he hasn't got the players back, he hasn't got Kante, who was a big miss. So clearly they are like a long, long, long way away from being competitive. It was really, really easy for City. I couldn't believe how, like, every time they attacked, they got in, because Chelsea had basically three attacking midfielders and none of them can defend.
I was surprised at how honest City were, given how little time they've had as well. I mean, I asked Pep this after the game, and like, some of the players only had two or three training sessions.
Yeah,
and yet they looked as if
Walker and Stones came back in the week. Yeah. Like, they were given the option not to come back, but they chose to come back for yesterday's games. So they trained twice.
It's very ominous for the rest of the league, to be honest.
What, City?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, they were a significant distance ahead last season, and nothing had happened this off-season that would suggest that was going to get drawn back.
But the fact they were this good that early again, and even like, you could see, I mean, having watched a lot of last season, bar the European games and the defence issues and all that, you would talk, I mean, how many more, like, can this team actually get much better? Yeah, already yesterday, Mendy was back in, and he could have reminded you that, yes, they actually did miss a lot last season, because they looked actually more physically powerful.
They didn't have a left-back, basically, last season. Not a proper one. They had Danilo, who is Danilo, and Fabian Delph, who deputised, I think, with we say he was like a 7 out of 10 deputy. Yeah.
And I think having Stones and Laporte together at centre-back actually made City better in possession than they would have been with Kompany or Otamendi, because Stones and Laporte are the two best ball players of City's four centre-backs.
Mm. You'd like that to be the first choice partnership?
Yeah, I think that will probably be the first choice partnership going forward. Like, they're both like 23, 24. They both cost huge amounts of money. Otamendi, I mean, Kompany's basically finished. Otamendi is probably past his best as well, if we're honest. So that was like a further dimension to City's play. And then also Bernardo Silva, who, you know, City did this yesterday without their two best players, David Silva and Kevin De Bruyne. But Bernardo Silva played in that David Silva role in the first half. He was fantastic. And it made you think, like, City can probably do without David Silva and De Bruyne, even though they're the two most important players. they can still be really good without those two guys for the next few weeks.
Yeah, yesterday was a case almost of basically, like, with every attack, which of the four kind of attacking players they had on the pitch, whose turn was it to kind of do something brilliant to impress? Like, they
what do you think of Mahrez on his competitive
debut? He was actually the quietest out of their attackers. Foden was better.
I thought he was, Phil Foden had a good game. It's one of those weird situations, isn't it, where, like, everyone wants him to play more this season. Everyone is kind of excited to see possibly an English player that breaks the mould a little for what you expect from an English midfielder these days. He was good. He was good, but do we think he's actually going to be a regular or even semi-regular this season?
I think we'll get more games than he did last year. I think last year he started maybe four or five games. But the thing is, because City didn't sign Jorginho, and it looks like they're not going to sign alternative to Jorginho, that effectively moves...
Pep brought it up yesterday.
It effectively moves Foden up the pecking order, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And also, given that Gundogan will probably get injured at some point, that means there will always be... I mean, certainly the cup competitions and maybe the easier home games, you think there will always be games for Foden?
There wasn't there some suggestion that Pep said they were looking at other midfielders now.
So yeah, he said they're still trying to get in because as he put it, they have no specific replacement for Fernandinho. But if they won't do any other business bar that, and if they can't get anyone, he may consider using John Stones as an alternative to.
Yeah, well, he played for the last 15 minutes of yesterday. Stones played in holding midfield,
and he suggested that Douglas Luiz, who I think was on loan last year, also might be someone that could step in, a young Brazilian midfielder. Anything else you want to say on the Community Shield, first game of the season? But it is basically a glorified preseason friendly.
Yeah,
and it that feel.
It felt like that more than ever, and that's probably down to the fact that it's just 3 weeks since the World Cup final.
It's kind of amazing that Mendy was playing.
Yeah, we got to train back with Jacob Steinberg of The Guardian yesterday, a friend of the podcast, and he made the point basically that it's like after the World Cup, it's like watching a match when you're like basically your stomach's full from the World Cup. So here's some sweets. That's what it was. It's a bit too soon.
Going to open my fourth pack of crisps of the day.
Well, but you just had a massive roast meal.
Yeah.
So I think.
I was looking up last week when I was doing my Community Shield preview, the gaps between the World Cup final and the Community Shield in the past. And I think there was 1 year in 2002 or something like that where it was almost 2 months. Whereas this, like, we haven't had even a chance to kind of basically digest the World Cup.
And it's so different to last year. Last year, I remember the season preview podcast, which must have been like our second podcast that we did, or third podcast. We've now done nearly 100, so thank you everyone for listening. The season preview podcast was about 2 hours long, nearly, because we were so excited and there was so much to talk about. But this year, I'd rather just focus on, because I think people are having a little bit of a struggle, the people are needing to kind of edge your way back in.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have to find the stories that you find interesting first. There are still a lot of things that I'm struggling to find any like part of me that cares, but there are stories that I think are going to be interesting this year, and like it's not just in the Premier League. I think Atletico Madrid might have their best shot of winning La Liga since they won it last. I think that's going to be really interesting because they've strengthened better than any of the top two.
Yeah.
Who have they signed?
They signed Thomas Lemar on one wing. They signed Gelson Martins from Sporting Lisbon, who has been one of the kind of really in-demand wingers over the last couple of years. They got him notionally on a free after he cancelled his contract with Sporting Lisbon.
They kept Antoine.
They kept Griezmann. They've signed Rodri, who is one of the best young players in Spain. They signed another kid, a Spanish kid, I can't remember his name. But they've basically strengthened more than anyone else. Real Madrid have brought in Vinicius Junior, who could be Neymar, but he could be Robinho. Like an unknown Brazilian, really. Who else they brought in? Odriozola is a good right back, but they haven't got any Galacticos. They obviously lost Cristiano Ronaldo.
It looks like they're going to struggle for one.
Yeah, no, I think they're going to struggle to buy anyone of that ilk. They have to kind of hope that Vinicius Junior becomes kind of a big star. In the same way that Barcelona went out and spent a lot of money on Arthur from Gremio, and they kind of need him to be a big part of this season. And who else have they got? They bought. I can't even remember. They sold Lucas Digne. They're about to sell Yerry Mina. They've still got Usman Dembele, but there's a chance that he could leave. They signed Arturo Vidal this weekend. It's just a weird. I think
is he any good now? Is he still good?
I think his knees.
Yeah,
his knees.
Well, that's why he's so cheap, as well as his age.
And he's also endless problems off the field. Most notably, most famously, when they were away with Chile and they skipped out for a night out and claimed that they were at the baptism of Jorge Valdivia's son when they all returned at 6 a.m. I think he also crashed a car that night. Anyway, what stories do we find interesting? At Atletico Madrid are one for me. I think there's going to be one to watch this season, but particularly in the Premier League. So I'll start with you, Jack. Something that's actually piqued your interest this offseason.
I think the most interesting story this season, by quite a long way, is this going to be a Mourinho season? I think that, not just because it's United, but because the Mourinho season 2015-16 was probably the most, unexpected, dramatic, and still kind of unexplained thing to happen in the Premier League in the last sort of 10 years. I think it's actually more interesting than Leicester winning the title. Because the way the Premier League is structured is that the big teams are so geared towards like always getting 80, 85 points. And so for Chelsea 2015-16 to be that bad is so unusual and freakish. It can't just be written off as like one of those things that happens. And I think that like the media as a whole hasn't done a good enough job holding Mourinho to account for 2015-16. And it does feel, I mean, Miguel knows more about this than I do, but it does feel to me as if like lots of the pieces are in place for something similar to happen this year at United. So for me, I think that's one of the most interesting things. Like, Miguel, do you think it's going to happen?
Well, it's even, I mean, with one of the most profound parallels being this idea of almost talking yourself into trouble. Like, we just start, like, and even if he has a justified complaint about transfers, the way he overplays it, as he did in 2015, which obviously then spiraled into other issues with, and there was, I mean, you can't see at the moment any sort of Dr. Eva Carneiro moment at United. But yeah, I mean, there's already tension with the playing squad. And I'm saying that as interesting as as interesting as the whole storyline is, and I think it is one of the how the season's going to be framed, some of the manner it's delivered remains exceptionally tedious, which is Mourinho's whole mood now is just like, oh, this again. This season hasn't even started, and we're back to the same old stuff.
I remember the basic dynamic of the Mourinho season is that they would lose, and Mourinho's response to losing would be like, I'm going to lash out, and then, but that will like somehow force the players to get their shit together, and they'll be good the next game. So lose, lash out, doesn't get the required effect. So next time he lashes out harder, then they lose again. Yeah. The next time he lashes out harder, but things keep getting worse.
Yeah,
he
doesn't. Yeah.
He kind of keeps pressing the button. He keeps pulling the lever.
Extremes. It's always tedious extremes. Like, there'll be one game where they're really bad, and then they'll lose, and he'll say, I thought we were really good today, this was my fault, whatever. Yeah, yeah. And then the next game they'll be really good, and he'll say, that was terrible. It's the sort of like, he needs to do something extreme at every point because he's so desperately trying to provoke a reaction from his squad. But the reason he can't provoke a reaction from his squad is because of the tedium of the way he treats them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the other side of this as well, I mean, if you look at the World Cup, look at especially the Champions League, actually, the knockout stage, and then what's happening at City, what's happening at Liverpool. You know, football has become fun again. We're probably in one of the most exciting eras in general for some time, and like the amount of goals being scored, and yet in the middle of this you have this kind of man who's
kind of been transplanted from 2006.
Yeah,
kind of
exactly.
Shit on a stick era.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He
didn't get the memo.
Yeah,
and you know, he's been caught out by this revolution once before a decade ago, and it feels like he's almost, you know, there was a little resurgence of what you might call defensive football, but kind of counter-pressing football, really. The sort of the modernised Mourinho in the likes of Simeone and I guess people like Dyche as well. Miguel, give me a story from this season that piques your interest.
I think, again, this is actually supposed to one touching on some old teams, but it's the dynamic has changed because of the decision Chelsea has taken. But can Sarri introduce the type of entertaining football that Abramovich would really want before Abramovich starts to get frustrated with results from this learning process?
Which manager is least likely to be there the first day of next season, Maurizio Sarri or Jose Mourinho?
I still say Sarri just because of Chelsea, but maybe because as kind of ominous as some things look at United, I still think that they'll just about grind their way through the season, kind of maybe to a third or fourth place, and that won't be quite enough for Woodward to kind of push them. Even though I think
they should be slow starters, though. Yeah, I mean, like if they're not slow starters, they've overachieved because the situation within which they've gone into the season is far from ideal.
Yeah, yeah. It is. I think now is probably the best time to play United, given what a mess they are and how they haven't got the players back, and clearly there's like big issues behind the scenes, and their best player Pogba is presumably not going to be ready for a while. So now is definitely the best time to play United.
Arsenal are, I guess, interesting again, because for so long, and we complained last year that the thing with Arsenal was that they were so predictable because we knew which way the Wenger stuff was heading. It did head that way. It did head that way eventually in the end, and we got a new coach, Unai Emery, who perhaps wasn't the guy that was expected. They have had a fairly low-key summer. They got some deals done early, very little done since. I don't think they've got much more money to spend. What do you think of the way that project's taking shape?
It's interesting. I mean, it's very hard to get a read on them. Like, I don't know. I've got no idea how good they're going to be. Or I don't even know what exactly they're aiming for. Like, the most recent parallel I can think of is like Tottenham 2014-15.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, obviously, like, replacing Tim Sherwood is not the same as replacing Arsene Wenger. But the idea of, like, a new manager coming in with new ideas, and he's got a squad which is a bit of a mess, And he's trying to bring in players who might fit with that. But you kind of get the sense that they're at the start of a process which will take a while for them to become good. And they might have to... Basically, they're going to have to be hard to beat and competitive before they can be like dangerous to the other top teams. Like, I know they've bought... The players they've got in are probably quite good for how Emery wants to play. But I think ultimately, like, a sort of scrapping their way to third or fourth is probably as good as it's going to get.
Yeah, I think so as well, yeah.
You think that's the ceiling of this team, is it third or fourth?
He's a good coach fundamentally, Emery, but he's not one of those that really bowls me over.
You fancy him in a cup competition. I mean, he's got a good record in knockouts.
Yeah, it's true, but yeah.
So I think this could be a transition season for Arsenal, but basically what they need is just to be trending upwards again. Yeah. That's what it feels like.
One thing actually I should write about Emery in that sense, I don't think I'll ever be able to get away from this with him, but I was there the day before the Barcelona 6-1 against PSG, and even the day before the game in his press conference, he seemed like a man petrified that precisely could happen. And it was just so meek. And it did genuinely make me lose respect for him.
I think, as a manager, and this is weird because I kind of consider Arsenal, one of the super clubs in the world because financially and stuff they are. PSG was a bigger job than Arsenal. Now bear with me here. Arsenal was a bigger club than Paris Saint-Germain in many ways, but I think that the PSG job was so big because they'd set the outer limits of what that job is as being a global super club, like in the stratosphere, like winning the Champions League. You've got Neymar, you've got Mbappe, you've got unlimited funds, all of these things. And he couldn't fill that void. He couldn't fill that gap. Whereas at Arsenal, I don't think it's a terrible fit. I don't think it's a terrible fit that he goes in there and it's, you know, get us back on the upward and see what you can do and sometimes be pragmatic and sometimes, you know, do bow to your more defensive instincts or whatever, because he's not necessarily the fundamentalist that Wenger was.
Well, one thing to be said, Phil, like, Emery is a proper coach, and one of the complaints from a lot of Arsenal players of the last few years under Wenger was they didn't get any real coaching. I think it was one thing, particularly from like the likes of Granit Xhaka, that they didn't really know what they were meant to be doing. It was very kind of laissez-faire.
Yeah, and a lot of them had friends at Tottenham. Yeah. And we were actually quite jealous when they heard about, Pochettino does this and that, and I've really improved on these things. And with Wenger, it was always like, you're a good player, figure it out for yourselves.
Yeah, so now at least, I think we could see individual improvement from a lot of Arsenal players.
And I think they'll be good defensively, which they're not, haven't been for years. I think they'll be well organised. I think the interesting thing is they'll be even though I don't think they'll be that good, there'll be a very different prospect for opposition.
Yeah.
The opponents are so used to playing against an Arsenal team who just collapses and they're really open and you get in once and then you're 3-0 up. Whereas this is going to be a kind of like scrappier Arsenal side. And actually they could catch some other teams offhand.
Yeah, and I think Lucas Torreira, the way he plays is going to be... We're going to see some pieces before October which are praising Torreira as the face of the new Arsenal because he's a bit scrappier.
Yeah.
He's still a great ball player, but he's got a bit of fight to him. He's got a bit of bite. He's got he's going to be involved. He's going to be making the tackles and picking up interceptions and then starting attacking play from there. So that's the sort of player that I think that fans really like as well.
Yeah, yeah,
like
totally.
With the first couple of times they see him, you're going to really notice his addition to that centre midfield, which is where they were so poor at times last year. So I'd look out for him. Across North London, Tottenham have been incredibly quiet. Is there anything interesting about this campaign? Perhaps the fact that they have been so quiet and, you know, can Pochettino just keep this going? Will the continuity ever end? Or is he just that good a coach?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because remember at the end of last season, Pochettino basically challenged the board when he said, we've got to be brave, take risks, do things differently.
They've not done that.
Yeah, right. And the presumption was, well, that means they're going to have to spend more money. And yet, in reality, because of the stadium, they have to sell before they can buy. And that means that usually, like, Levy leaves his business until the last days of the window so he can get the best deals. But now, like, the roles have been reversed and Levy's having to go around trying to flog Alderweireld and Rose to generate money to buy players. Yeah. But that's really hard because if you keep calling someone up asking them to buy Danny Rose, they're never going to take your first offer. It's like he's getting levied by other chairmen.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think, looking at Spurs, trying to look through really rose-tinted sort of glasses here, they didn't spend money on new signings, but they did tie down like Harry Kane to a massive new contract and things like that. Like, how significant is that, especially before the World Cup, you know, to get Kane and people like that tied down?
Yeah, I think it's, and the good thing about Spurs is that their first 11 is still really good. Like, if everyone's fit, then that they've got like 12 or 13 players, and particularly remember that Trippier is probably a better player now than he was in the past, like, which can easily come top four. I've got no doubt that they can get top four with that team. However, they've got the long-term problems, which is not enough depth, and the problem they've had for really 4 years, which is that they can't sign players to improve the team. No one they've signed since Dele Alli has improved the first 11. Like Aurier, Sissoko, Llorente, Janssen, like none of them have made an improvement.
That's a good point, Jack. I hadn't thought about that. But it's true. Yeah, no, they haven't really been signing to improve the first
like
team.
Like Sanchez might improve them in time, but he's not as good as Toby Alderweireld yet. Mm. And like Spurs are further away than ever from solving that problem, from signing players to improve them.
That's kind of the opposite of Liverpool, Miguel, who are interesting because they, I think, believe that they could challenge for the title this year. Many people do think they're going to be the closest team to Manchester City. And they have actively, you know, in their signings, the signings have been few, but have been of high quality.
Yeah, friends.
Basically, you know, Virgil van Dijk was the first that we need a really good centre-back. We're going to go out and spend a lot of money to get him. They wanted Naby Keita. They got him a year in advance, and now we're going to see him. I'm quite excited to see how that turns out because a friend of mine who works in player recruitment thinks he's genuinely one of the top 3 to 5 central midfielders in the world and could easily be one of the top players in the world. They've gone out and got Zedan Shaqiri, who was basically just a really good deal. Now, they didn't get Nabil Fekir. They wanted a kind of number 10 second striker sort of guy, and they didn't get him. But you're still looking at that first 11, the squad, how they played last season, and you know, do you think they've got it?
It's going to be a very exciting season again. It'll be great to watch. They'll go very far. But I think they'll just fall short because ultimately Liverpool have to push everything they've got to the maximum to win the title. And I still think City have, in terms of resource, in terms of depth, that bit more.
Yeah. If City weren't the best team in the history of English football, then I'd back Liverpool to win the league.
Yeah.
Like that group of players can easily get 90 points and play some brilliant stuff. But unfortunately, like they're up against a sort of super force.
The recent games against each other almost sum it up. Basically, Liverpool on an individual day can be as good, if not better, than City. But over the course of a season,
38 games. Like, come on, like City. It would take quite a lot of things to go wrong at City. For City to drop enough points for Liverpool to beat them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I fundamentally think that City could win the title playing at 90% or like 85% of their capabilities, whereas Liverpool would need to play at 100% and hope that City really dip. I'm just trying to find out what the actual Premier League title odds are because...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I was thinking yesterday. Are Liverpool now at the club with the most league titles in Europe to have gone the longest without winning a title?
Probably someone like Ferencváros who have been relegated to like the fifth tier of Hungarian football.
But they have 18 titles and like because 18 titles in 29 years at least.
They've probably got a lot of Hungarian titles. But I mean, I think it's an interesting question. I haven't got a clue who the answer is. If you believe Man City are absolutely certain to win the title, basically, you could stash your money away with a bookmaker and make like 60% ROI over the season. It might be the best investment available in our post-Brexit economy. So think about that one. And outside Liverpool, I guess we've actually pretty much touched on all of the top six, but I think there are interesting stories outside that. What has caught your eye from the other 14 teams in this off-season?
I like Fulham and Wolves. I think that we talked about this before with the examples of Burnley and Bournemouth. The most important thing when you're coming into the Premier League is to have an idea of how you want to play with a manager who's been there for a while and can execute it, and players brought in to play that system. Like, that's the best way. That's why Burnley and Bournemouth are still in the Premier League. That's why someone like QPR, where they make it up as they go along, and not in the Premier League anymore. And I kind of think both Fulham and Wolves have that. Like, they both have very clear philosophy from the manager, really good recruitment. Fulham have bought brilliantly.
Yeah.
Like, what, Seri, who's like one of the most in-demand midfielders in Europe, Alfie Mawson, Mitrovic, Andre Schürrle, World Cup winner, and was pretty handy at Chelsea.
The only thing I'm worried about with Fulham, I think I completely agree with you. I think Slavisa Jokanović is a great coach. They played some brilliant football last year. I'll personally probably see quite a lot of them this year, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to be an interesting team. So fair play to bring them up first. I worry if they lack goals. Mitrovic was great for them last year when he came in, and he scored, 12 before the end of the season in January. And I think he's great at leading the line. He won't score as many goals in the Premier League, I don't think, because he won't get as many chances. Mm. And he does need a few chances. He's not the most natural finisher. He's a great solo line leader sort of player. Yeah. Obviously, they've got Sessegnon, who's a phenomenal talent. Tom Kearney's absolutely brilliant. Seri, I'm interested to see, because he was a player who was slated to go much higher up the league, really, or to Barcelona even. Barcelona had a deal lined up for him, which they pulled out of at the last minute a year ago. So Fulham interest me. I think they might lack goals.
Yeah.
Wolves, I completely agree. Wolves are going to be an interesting case because, I mean, everyone knows how the club is run, and I guess it is significant that for the first time since he really had his claws in at Manchester United, Jorge Mendes has a Premier League club.
Yeah, they signed João Moutinho.
Yes.
Like, are you taking the piss? Like, he's so good. Yeah, I think he's probably, until he signed that, I think he was the best probably the best player in Europe never to have played in the top league.
Yeah.
Never played in Spain, Italy, Germany or England until now. Like, he's had this kind of slightly odd career. Started off in Portugal. I think he started off at Sporting and then
went to Porto.
Then he went to Porto and then remember Tottenham tried to sign him in 2012 as their Modric replacement because AVB really wants him, but Levy couldn't quite get the deal done at the last minute. He ended up going to Monaco as part of the deal where James Rodriguez went to Monaco as well. Was really, really good there. But, you know, when Monaco sort of stopped throwing as much money at it, I think he tried to engineer and move to United two years ago. But that didn't happen. So he's been having a great time on his yacht in Monaco, won the French
Tax
League.
Tax-free, remember?
Yeah. Mm. God knows how much money he's got stored up. But now we're going to see him in the Prem. Like, he's such an amazing player. And they've got Ruben Neves in that midfield as well. It's going to be one of the best.
They've got a lot of good players. Helder Costa, Cavalero. Who's going to be playing up front for them? Did they sign Andre Silva on loan from AC Milan?
No, they signed Mexican striker. Is it
Raul Jimenez, who was at Atletico a couple of years ago and didn't do much, but has been at Benfica and I think he's done a little bit better. The thing that I worry about, I've kind of seen this before with Valencia.
Mm.
I think that when you've got this first wave of players that come through, and Wolves fans are in dreamland now, and lots of fans criticise them, and they're very defensive and spiky and say, we almost saw our club go out of business. We're playing against Walsall, all that. You know, I'll take Ruben Neves, João Moutinho, et cetera. And I completely sympathise with that, because this is one of those journeys where, it's going to be, there's going to go up, there's going to be a peak, and there's going to be a down at some point, right? You have to enjoy the up while you're on the up. There's no point worrying about the down when you're on the way up. They're on the way up now. There's going to be a point when, because of the way these players are coming to the club, there's going to be a point when other clubs come in and you have to sell some of these players. The worry is that the replacements who come in are players who just need to find a home rather than the players that you want to improve the football team. And that's when things can start going down. I hope it doesn't happen to Wolves, but we've seen it happen at other clubs which were operating a similar model. So I think they'll go really well this season. And I think top half is not out of the question. Yeah. Do you think
I think they can get top half.
8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, there's so much difference.
There's so much bunching from 8 to 20 that it's only really, if you get an extra 5 or 6 points beyond what you're expected, you can really fly up through the table. So I completely back them to get top half.
We spent every week last season seemingly talking about that Fatberg of, 12 teams that were inseparable from 20th up to about 8th. Do we think that will stay together this season? Do you think they'll be more spread out? I think we can't take too many just one-time lessons out of last season, but it'd be interesting to see how that plays out.
Well, Everton's going to be interesting as well. Given as almost a traditional 7th team recently, it feels as if the league is basically 6-1-13.
What do we think of their transfer approach this
summer? Well, more even as interesting as Marco Silva, because Had the move actually been made a year ago, you would have thought, "Wow, everything, this is exciting." Whereas some of Silva's glass is now gone.
Yeah, slightly, I think it's slightly tainted by what happened over the last year. I don't think they've bought well. I don't look at their squad and think it's a good, well-balanced squad. They still haven't replaced
Lukaku. They clearly have no obvious plan.
Look at
their transfers over the last 14 months. They don't have an obvious plan. If they sign Yerry Mina, as it seems,
And the Mina thing, I mean, he was
not a good defender at Barcelona.
He was touted as going to United, but from what I heard, basically, that was most of the speculation came from the Barcelona end, who basically realised this player has had a good World Cup. We can get a lot more money than we might have.
But pre-World Cup, they were always going to get rid of him. Mm. They were always going to get rid of him on loan or on a buyback deal. Mm. He scores 3 goals at a World Cup, which, remember, is not his job. And then suddenly, he's worth $35 million. It's absolutely mind-boggling, and it smacks of a club that just are playing it by ear, basically. Mm. Which, you know, yeah, it might work. It might work 1 year in 5. You might finish 7th this season. It doesn't endorse what you've been doing. Richarlison for $50 million, that's a weird one as well. Any other club? Oh, Max Meyer is an interesting one. Going to Crystal Palace, you'd hope that, well, I mean, I still think there's a chance Wilfried Zaha could leave before Thursday. If it's going anywhere, I think it can only be Chelsea. Mm. But Max Meyer was really highly rated when he was at Schalke. German international, was captain of their Olympic team, the under-23s. Just didn't get the interest on a free transfer this summer that he was expecting. I think people close to him blame the sort of smear campaign around Schalke.
What was the smear campaign?
Basically, he said that he wouldn't sign a new deal with Schalke last year. They offered him terms, and he said, no, I'm going to try it out on a Bosman, which more and more players are going to do, because I think they've seen in American sports, if you become a free agent, you make a lot more money.
Yeah, and also transfer fee inflation is such that it's actually really hard to get sold.
Yeah, it is, yeah. And even like middling players, like Joe Ledley is one of the ones who's, I think he's had 2 or 3 Bosman moves in his life, and he's made loads of money for a player of his ability. And that's how you maximise your worth, is by being a free agent. So any club can come in and pay your worth. And Max Meyer, in the end, gets a deal that's worth a basic like £85,000 per week-ish at Crystal Palace. And he gets an opportunity to prove himself. You know, as far as I'm aware, that there's going to be a Champions League club release clause in there, but like Crystal Palace get him for maybe a year or two.
Where will he play in that Crystal Palace system?
I'd say on the left of that narrow midfield 4.
Where Loftus-Cheek was playing last year?
Yeah, pretty much. So I think the goalkeeper will be Guaita. I think he's probably going to beat Hennessy to the number one job, although for most of preseason.
Who's he? I've never heard of him.
I wasn't sure. Vicente Guaita. He was at Valencia originally, went to Getafe, one of the best goalkeepers in La Liga, and they signed him on a free in January. They were trying to get it done early. Couldn't get it done. Signed a pre-contract deal in February, which was announced. Atletico Madrid and Fiorentina came in for him this summer, but Palace said it would be $15 million. He's never played a game for us. So he will be fighting with Hennessy for the number one spot, if not number one. The back four, you've got Wan-Bissaka, the kid who really came through last year. I think he'll start at right back. Mm. Sacco and Tompkins, I think they've got a ridiculous record. Like when they played together last year, Palace won every game or something like that. Very good. And then left back Van Aanholt, I think, was one of the revelations of last year as well. Midfield, Cheku Coyote, they signed from West Ham, alongside Luka Milivojevic. That's solid as a midfield pairing is going to be. On the right, you can either have Andros Townsend, James MacArthur. On the left, you could have Max Meyer. I guess you could play someone like Zaha. They were looking for Andre Ayew. They nearly had that deal in place, but Yara Riedewald didn't want to go. And then up front, Zaha, Benteke, Sorloth, Connor Wickham, if he's back from 2 Wickham. Years out. Yeah. And they're trying to get possibly a lone striker. They talked over Tammy Abraham.
What do we think about West Ham and Southampton?
West Ham, I think, have bought some good players. I think they've got a very good coach. There's no direction. They've bought random players that have been offered to them who are expensive but very good. So it can work. Like it worked with Dimitri Payet. It can go badly, where you've spent a load of money on players and they don't perform. But West Ham can't be as bad as last year. I don't think they're going to be in the relegation mix this year.
Mm. Yeah, and think about Pellegrini is a good coach, and he has overachieved with most teams that he's had. But then if you look at his record, like at Villarreal he had Riquelme, who he could build the team around. At Malaga he had Isco, who he could build the team around. He had a brilliant Real Madrid squad with Ronaldo. And when he took over from City in 2013, he was inheriting that City squad at its physical peak.
Yeah, yeah.
Like all that, like Yaya Silva, Aguero, Zabaleta, Kompany, Hart, all yeah. basically at their best that year. And he, and of course, like as with Isco and Riquelme, he had like a David Silva figure who everything could kind of cohere around on the pitch. At West Ham, he doesn't have that. Like, he's got Wilshere. Lanzini, the most clever midfielder, is out for the whole season.
It's almost a little bit of an acid test of Pellegrini in the sense that we're going to see how much of his previous kind of attacking football is down to the players are disposable and how much of his system. Because now he's in more in need of a system, basically.
Yeah, and certainly like at City, his reputation was not of a kind of like details coach like yeah, Pep. Yeah. He was more of a kind of like stand on the sideline with a cigarette and you know tell the players, go on lads, figure it out.
I really like him. I think he's going to do well. We've only got 4 minutes, so I just need to
who's going down.
Yeah, well, I want to rattle through some of the teams we haven't talked about. Just looking at Bournemouth, they basically signed two players, Diego Rico from Leganés and David Brooks from Sheffield United, but they have a way of staying up seemingly every season under Eddie Howe.
Lou Charlton.
Yeah, but you know, how much would it take to go against them? Last year, according to like the some of the XG measures, they were one of the luckiest teams in the league last year. And if they regress to the mean or even get unlucky this year, then they could be in trouble.
Right. Yeah, I think they've enough. Huddersfield have probably gone down, are they?
Yeah, I think Huddersfield have gone.
Brighton, I think, have bought very well. Brighton have bought Florian Andone from Deportivo La Coruña for about £6 million, which is a bargain. Leon Balogun, who we saw at the World Cup, Mainz defender. They bought Alireza Yehanbakhsh, the Iranian forward from
Azad Alkmaar. I think I spoke to him in a mix zone in St. Petersburg.
Who they think could be really good. And I think that was a club record fee of around £20 million. They've also signed Bernardo, who's just a really good fullback from RB Leipzig. So they've secretly got a lot better. Burnley have signed one player, Ben Gibson.
Yeah, and they might...
They're really trying to get Joe Rodriguez.
They've actually got quite a lot of depth, Burnley. It'll be interesting to see how they cope with Europa League football. I hope they do well. I think they'll be fine. I'm sure they'll stay up.
They look solid. Cardiff.
So down.
Have you seen...
So down.
I don't want to speak too soon, but I looked at their starting 11 the other day and I couldn't find one that I thought would stay in the Premier League. They'd have to, everyone would have to kind of overachieve. Like Bobby Reid from Bristol City is going to have to hit the ground running. Alex Smith, he's a sign from QPR. Greg Cunningham, the former Manchester City left-back, joins from Preston. And Josh Murphy from Norwich. They've kind of signed upper championship players, hoping they make the step up, I guess. Chelsea, we've discussed. Crystal Palace, we've discussed. Everton, we've discussed. Fulham, we've definitely discussed. Fabry from Besiktas was a player we've got to talk about. Huddersfield, Miguel, you don't like the look of them. They signed Terence Kongolo from Monaco for £17 million.
Not that I don't like the look, but I mean, I think they drastically overachieved their last season. It doesn't mean what they're doing isn't good. It's just, you know, they're still ultimately...
They're the smallest and poorest club in the Prem so far.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, the deck is always stacked against them. Leicester are an interesting side because...
They're actually bought interestingly.
James Maddison is a really good player.
Yeah, he's a great player.
And I would love to see how he does in the Premier League. I think he could be fun to watch. They're trying to sign...
It's got that guy from Monaco, the winger.
Signed Rashid Ghazal from Monaco. Yeah, that's gone through. Johnny Evans from West Brom. That happened really early. £3.5 million. That's one of the best value signings of the summer. They signed Danny Ward from Liverpool, which seemed like an overpay. And Ricardo Pereira, who's a very good Porto right back.
He's the guy that Tottenham tried to sign last year. He's really highly rated.
Leicester have seemingly bought quite well. I think... as long as Claude Puel stays in charge, they're not going to make too many headlines. But they should easily get enough points to stay up and then probably be in that mid-table.
They'll be fine.
We talked about Liverpool, Manchester City and United. We talked very little about Newcastle this off-season because they haven't done much.
That's another place going through Groundhog Day.
Johnny wrote his column on Rafa Benitez needing to leave his abusive boyfriend, Mike Ashley. Very, very entertaining column you should read from Friday. They've really not done much. Southampton are a team who stayed up by the skin of their teeth. They spent £16 million on Basel's Mohamed Al-Younesi, £7 million on Stuart Armstrong from Celtic. They've brought giant centre-back Yannick Vestergaard from Borussia Mönchengladbach and Manchester City's Angus Gunn for £13.5 million.
I think they're in trouble, Southampton.
Mark Hughes.
I don't know whether Mark Hughes is the right man to build them upwards, even though he saved them last year. I mean, there's not much evidence that he would be the right guy for the job.
I think they could have bought those exact same players if they'd been relegated.
They don't have a striker. Who's that? Like, their best striker, Charlie Austin, is not a Premier League striker.
Yeah, yeah. Shane Long can't score.
Shane Long can't score.
El Yunusi, I guess.
Gabby Udini, who I'm not sure. Their best player, Dusan Tadic, they sold to Ajax.
Yeah. Yes. The outbound, they've lost Dusan Tadic, who we talked to at length in Russia, and he loved his time at Southampton, but is looking forward to going back to Ajax. Back to Holland with Ajax. Jordi Klaassi's gone. Club record £19 million signing in January. Guido Carrillo has also gone on loan to Leganés. Sofiane Boufal, who's the other club record signing, has gone on loan to Celta Vigo. So they've brought in a lot of quality that they've immediately got rid of for very little money, which is usually a bad sign. So I think you're right, Southampton could be in trouble. Tottenham, no ins, as we've discussed. Watford have signed Ben Wilmot from Stevenage, a guy you know a bit about.
Yeah, like, very talented young defender they got from League Two. Could have gone to Arsenal and Tottenham and then gone out on loan, but chose to go to Watford because he's straight into the first team squad. I wouldn't be that bullish about Watford this year. Mm. Like, I don't. I mean, you don't have to be that good to stay up. That's a problem. So it's not like they proved anything by staying up last year. I just kind of think it's not much quality there. Javi Gracia, unproven in the Premier League, wouldn't be that optimistic if I was a Watford fan.
I actually forgot he was still in charge. But yes. So that's everyone. We've actually discussed every Premier League team. We'll obviously discuss them more at length over the season. If you are new here, then please remember to rate, review and subscribe. We're going to have, over the coming weeks, a big Champions League preview show. We're going to be talking the Champions League draw. We'll dig deep into this weekend's big game, which you're going to on Sunday, Miguel.
Yep, we both are, aren't we?
Yeah, Arsenal against City on
Sunday. Arsenal against Manchester City. A big premiere for Unai Emery against Pep Guardiola's already fully firing Manchester City side. I'll be at Crystal Palace Fulham on Saturday to see two kind of interesting teams, Roy Hodgson's former side against current side, and see how that pans out by the river. Until then, I guess, we'll see you later. Miguel, thank you for coming in today. Jack, thank you for all of your work. I've been Ed Mallion. This has been the Indie Football Podcast. And until next week, goodbye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.